Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Growth Matters Radio.
Well, here we are for another show of Growth Matters on a cold, cold Friday here in Atlanta. And today on our show, we have two guests who are going to help us talk about the topic of role integration. Not so much, I think, a term that most people think about, work-life balance, and I love this as a concept. And so with us, we have Dr. Jane Goldner, and she is president of the Goldner Group. And she has written a book, it's her second, I think, Women Driven to Success. You can have it, and it's crossed out, your all. And so we'll get a little bit more about that concept. But Jane is a speaker and an author and a role integration coach, and she brings a wealth of experience from the consulting work that she has done with Goldner Group in really counseling and human resource development and helping people reach their potential. So welcome, Jane. How are you?
Good, Michelle. Thank you for having me here.
Great. And then we also have Cynthia Frisina. She is the executive director and founder of Reaching for the Stars, and it's a foundation for hope for children with cerebral palsy. But she also is the CEO of a social media consultancy, Health Marketing Works, and she's going to help us understand kind of how those two things have come together and really embodies this idea of role integration. So, Cynthia, welcome.
Thank you, Michelle. Glad to be here.
So, Jane, just let's just start with having our listening audience learn a little bit more about both of your backgrounds so that they have a sense of who you are and kind of how you came to what each of you are doing right now. So if I were to ask you, you know, describe your career path, kind of describe in that nutshell the experience you have that brought you to writing this book.
Well, a long, long time ago, I started out in education, teaching in a high school for kids with drug problems. And did that for 3 years and became a coordinator in a school system and decided that I really think I can contribute in the business world. So I segued into human resources in the business world, and as I made the move, I went into my doctoral program to get a PhD in human resource development, worked in several companies in Atlanta, one a Fortune 100 company, and then because of my conflicting roles, when my division was sold, I decided not to go into corporate headquarters because my sons were young and I wanted to spend more time with them. And so I became a consultant, which allowed me much more flexibility. And over the last 25-plus years, I've been doing major projects in companies. And the last several years, decided my real passion is helping women figure out their all.
Great. Great. So, Cynthia, tell us a little bit about your background.
Sure, thanks. Well, I started out in traditional advertising a long time ago, about 25 years ago, for major ad agencies in Chicago, working on big brands. From there, I transitioned to the client side for Hyatt Hotels Corporation, and that ended up bringing me to Atlanta from Chicago. In time for the 96 Olympics and starting a much larger advertising campaign. When I got to Atlanta on the client side, I had other opportunities when digital marketing was just starting and the internet was really starting to become a marketing force to start a digital company. And during that time, I was pregnant with my second child and had a lot of complications, and she subsequently was diagnosed with cerebral palsy. As a part of that, I then realized that there was a void in that disorder in terms of a parent organization or federal funding for research, and decided to start an organization, a nonprofit foundation. First, we thought it was going to be a very small one. But because there was really a void in that area of parents speaking up on behalf of this issue, it grew really rapidly. And it ended up now growing into the largest global nonprofit pediatric foundation of its kind led by parents, which is something I'm really proud of. But a byproduct of that ended up that I could continue to use my marketing skills to help healthcare professionals and other healthcare institutions be able to reach patients more effectively with social media. So an interesting sort of turn of events.
Yeah. So, Jane, I know you're excited about this new book that you have. How long has it been out?
It came out in late October.
Okay.
And so it's just been a few months, and it has been so well received. And interestingly, it's women driven to success. You can have it crossed out, you're all. But I'm hearing from particularly millennial men, wait a minute, this also applies to me, because they're trying to figure out, how do I not just work all the time? How do I integrate the roles that I have?
Yeah, so as I teed up at the top of the hour, a lot of times when people talk about this subject, they talk about it as work-life balance. And you have a different perspective about that, and it's really on this cornerstone idea of role integration. So tell us a little bit about what that concept is and sort of the premise of having your all versus thinking about having it all.
When I think about work-life balance, I think about a scale of justice, that everything every day is 50-50. So therefore, I think that achieving work-life balance is probably as achievable as world peace. We just can't have that every day. And also, work is a role we play. It is one of the roles we do. Now, albeit a big one, but it's one of the roles that we have in our life. So it's more about, how do we take all the roles that we have and integrate them together, sort of like a tapestry? We weave them together, so overall we're getting our all. And the whole concept of your all came about because there's been so much ink spilled, there's been so much talk, there's been so many blogs and tweets written about, can women have it all? No, women can't have it all. And from my own life, from my research, from the interviews that I did with successful senior-level women in the book, the conclusion is there is no universal it all. It's really about your all and what's important to you and what are your priorities, regardless of what everybody else is doing. So in Sheryl Sandberg's terms, some women lean in, but others lean out, and yet others lean back.
Great. Cynthia, just kind of given what you shared about the various things that you're juggling, in my mind, and one of the reasons I was glad to have you on the show with Jane, is that you're really living that. So what's your perspective about this whole role integration and how you're trying to live that out day to day?
I think I'm leaning in all directions all the time. That's a great point. I think I struggled a lot more with that when I was young, of having it all. What did that mean? You can have it all, but you can't have it all at the same time. But as I've gotten older, I think that if you can find your passion and find what your true path is, it becomes about doing what you love, and those lines start to become less. They hold you back less. You become more fearless, honestly, and some of those things become a little bit more clear. So in my particular situation, I find that because I'm so passionate about what I'm doing in my nonprofit work, I'm able to bring that passion into my for-profit work as well with those clients, and I find that just makes everything so much better.
Yeah, so let me pick up on what you just said, which is you're able to bring your nonprofit and your for-profit. Talk to us a little bit about kind of what that means so that people have a better sense of how you're marrying those things and what those two areas are.
Sure. I think for me, I became very aware that what was most important to me is being able to give back and help improve people's lives. And I wanted to do that in my work life, that I was compensated for, as well as my nonprofit work. So because I work with so many healthcare institutions and researchers and government entities dealing with this healthcare issue, I found that my marketing background could be really helpful to them to be able to help improve people's lives, help patients access information more effectively, or increase a dialogue between patients and clinicians in a way that maybe they hadn't done before. And as long as I keep true to myself and my overarching philosophy of what I want to accomplish in terms of helping improve the lives of people in the healthcare arena, it works very well together.
I would imagine as you're listening to that, Jane, if I look at kind of how your book is laid out, one of the things that you talk about is that you really have to know kind of what's important for you and what's your North Star and what is it that you are passionate about and value. So as you were writing the book and probably living some of this as well in your career, what were some of the things that you learned around this sort of getting in touch what is most important to you so that you can follow your passion?
Well, first of all, it really started with my own story. When I was in my early 30s, I was working full-time, I was married, I had two children, young, and I was in my doctoral program. And one week, my housekeeper quit, and I said to my husband, oh, don't worry, I can do that in my spare time. And everything was working well for several weeks until one morning I woke up with chest pains, and I thought, of course, I'm under stress, so I have chest pains. They didn't go away the whole week, and on Friday I went to the doctor. And he did an examination, came in, did an EKG, came into the office and said, well, I'm sorry to have to tell you this. You've had a heart attack. And so began my reflection about how did I let this happen to me? How did I compromise my heart? And it was a real red flag to me that I was trying to be everything to everybody, and it wasn't working well. So I started thinking about how do you get to the point where you can stand in your own power and make decisions between yes and no, and not be everything to everybody. And the real key element of that is to understand your own core. And we most often associate a core with organizations, with companies. They've got their mission, vision, set of key values. But many of us don't think about the fact that each of us needs to identify our core. So what is our mission? What is our purpose in life, just not in work? If we were working that really well, what would our vision be like? What could we be at our best? And what are some real key values that we wouldn't compromise even for $1 million? And once you have that, that becomes your passion. It becomes your priorities. And you're able to decide between yes and no and where you want to focus your energy and your time so you're not acquiescing to everybody else's demands.
It seems, Cynthia, that while Jane's story is obviously different than yours, it was a life sort of changing experience for you with your daughter when she was diagnosed with cerebral palsy that had you stop, think about things that were important. And I think for my listening audience, as I was talking to Cynthia before the show, you were sort of thinking very differently about what you were going to do and what your role would be as a result of this. So talk to us a little bit about kind of that path, because it probably wasn't as intentional as, oh, I've got to think about what my core is, right?
No, it wasn't. It was actually clearly one of the most devastating things at the time that I had ever experienced. I already had been in the hospital for the majority of the time I was pregnant with my second daughter with many complications. And once she was born prematurely, we thought perhaps we were out of the woods. We didn't receive the diagnosis of CP, which is the acronym for it, right away. It was when she was about 9 months old. And honestly, when we first received those words, I didn't know what that meant. I knew it wasn't good, but I didn't understand the full spectrum of what that would imply. And so, of course, you know, immediately, as most people do when they receive a medical diagnosis these days, I went home and Googled it, and the first thing that came up was personal injury lawyers and a lot of doom and gloom. So I think I could not believe that this would, you know, I just really went into complete shock. It was a very difficult time, probably the darkest time I ever had because I didn't know what to expect. There wasn't a lot of information out there for parents who had children diagnosed with CP that was positive. And I thought for sure my marketing career was over completely and that there would be, you know, no way out, that my full-time life would be about caring for my child with CP. And it honestly took a couple of years to deal with that kind of life-changing event that you don't expect and come to terms with, I have two choices. I can either become bitter. I can either not do anything proactive about this, or is there something I can do that might leverage what I know? Again, I had no intention. I had no understanding that it would grow to the degree that it did at the time, but I knew I had to do something because I knew that when my daughter grew up and other kids like her, I wanted her to know that I did as much as I possibly could for her and for this issue.
So, Jane, as you've talked to, as you mentioned, the format of your book, you've interviewed other leaders and other women who have had experiences in this area. What was kind of in talking about this, getting to where your core is, and in some ways both of you taking a situation that is difficult and then turning that around and seeing the possibilities in it, are there just sort of general themes or general things that you saw for people that are grappling with this and able to kind of come out on the other side with better role integration?
All of the women that I interviewed are married and have multiple children. And I think, in fact, all of them have three. And they're at significant levels in organizations, from a CEO to vice presidents to directors to a solo practitioner of law. So they're all very focused, career-oriented women, yet also focused on their family. A couple of themes came out. One is, it's really critical to understand what your priorities are so that you're not acquiescing to everybody else's demands. Many of them are high-capacity women.
And define that for us.
What that means is, for example, one of these women gets up at 4:30 in the morning to exercise to make sure she stays healthy, and she does that so she can, when her children wake up, she can have breakfast with her children before they go to school. And then she goes off to work, and she does a lot of volunteering in the community. But she makes sure she spends a lot of time with her children. And in general, a lot of these women's husbands or significant others are significant in their life. They share responsibilities. So while a couple of them are in traditional marriages where they tend to do it all, many of them share responsibilities with their significant others. In fact, one woman husband is a stay-at-home dad, which enables her career. So it's really this whole notion of how am I going to live my priorities? And I've got to be real specific about what they are. Also, and maybe to your life point, life is not static. Things change, and so you have to continually ask yourself questions and evaluate where you are and tweak accordingly. So one of the phrases I really live by is, as you change your roles, change what you do, but stay who you are.
Cindy, does that seem to resonate with you, that you've had to evolve and change, but you've still been able to stay at your core?
I think so. I think if I'm really honest with myself, I have changed a lot for the better since all of this happened with my daughter and the foundation and dealing with the people that I deal with. I think, I don't know if it's a combination of age or that experience, but I think before that happened, you know, I was a C-level chief marketing officer, and I think I was less tolerant, actually, of others, maybe even other women, if I'm really honest. Mm-hmm. I was pretty hard-charging and not as flexible and empathetic so as I am now. I think that now I'm a much better leader and woman and goal accomplisher, honestly, if I'm honest, now than I was even before. I do find, though, to be honest, that I put some of my own health in working out. I don't do it at 4:30 in the morning. I put some of those things on the back burner. I have to figure out a way to be better at that. But But I think staying true to who you are is so critical. I wish I would have had Jane's book 10 years ago.
So as we've been talking about this, one of the things that you've been able to do, as I understand it, is not just integrate what's important to you, but you're also role integration because you're running two organizations. Most of the time when we have a guest, they're either, you know, on the corporate or the business side, and they might volunteer at a not-for-profit, or they run a not-for-profit. But you're having to integrate the roles of leading those two organizations. Give our listeners a tip or two about how you're able to make both of those work and bring, for lack of a better word, the balance between what needs to happen on in both of those.
Sure. I think one of the ways that I do that is I do try to set distinct boundaries in my time during my day. So, for example, I will set X amount of time where I'm solely focusing on my nonprofit work and then X amount of time or certain days on my for-profit work. I also have a virtual assistant, very useful, and a good group of subcontractors and partners and network that can really come together on specific projects. And I've been doing this a long time in terms of managing different pieces, in-house agencies versus external partners, advocacy efforts that I do with my nonprofit foundation and for-profit work. So I've gotten better at it. At first, it was challenging, but I think that for someone who might be just starting out or in the early stages of that, trying to set a schedule, it won't be perfect, and not being afraid to fail. One thing that I think I've really embraced over the last, you know, even really year, even more so, is fail fast, fail often. Don't be afraid to fail, because that's how you're going to learn. You know, most of the great innovations and inventions come from people who fail a lot, but then they'll hit a home run. And I think sometimes women are a little more fearful in general, not to generalize, but sometimes they can be more reluctant to fail and have people know that they failed. But I'm really embracing that concept and finding it to accelerate me even further.
You know, you sound like one of the women I interviewed who said, be intentional, be disciplined, but remain flexible and adaptable.
Mm. Yeah. One of the chapters in your book is that, Jane, it's chapter 4 is a toolkit for your journey, the 6 essentials. And so, you know, that's some things that we can use practically for people that are wrestling with this and want to have more synergy and be more at peace with how they're bringing these things together. Give us a sense of what some of those essentials are, and then maybe give us an example of how that has played it out with someone in the book.
Okay. So the first part of the book and what we talked about was to define your core, what's really important to you. And that's part one, but so what, unless you do something about it, and that's what the 6 essentials are. So once you define that core, the first thing is you need a personal support system, because you can't do it all. And so who's in your support system that allows you to do the things that are important to you? And you need to build that and keep building it, even though when you think you're done, you just never know who's going to fall off, so you need to keep
it fresh.
Yeah. So, for example, I mentioned that all the women have children. Some of the women had nannies. They could do that. Some shared a nanny with their neighbors. Some used college students to carpool their older kids after school. Some used dry cleaning services that pick up and drop off dry cleaning. Some used online shopping, and then when picked up their grocery, it was all helping them with the allotment of time and roles. The second thing is delegation. If you're a leader, it's really important to delegate, and we women tend to think that if we want it done exactly right, we have to do it ourselves.
Cindy.
And actually, with the interview with Lorianne Goldman, who's the president and CEO of Spanx, she said to me, I used to think that, but then I learned that other people can do it right. It might not be exactly the way I would do it, but it would still be right, mm-hmm. and I had to learn to let go. The other thing is we think, well, I don't want to bother that person. They already have a lot on their plate. Well, that's why you have people reporting to you. And so we women need to learn to delegate to help us get where we want to go. Another is to get mentors and sponsors. And many women don't know the difference. And there was a vice president of Catalyst, I think, who said it well. She said that a mentor is someone who talks with you about your career, could be inside or outside your organization. A sponsor is someone who talks about you to open doors to challenging assignments, to help you, if you're an entrepreneur, get more business. Very distinctly different roles. Both are valuable, but if I had to choose, I'd get a sponsor, or sponsors, plural. Another is negotiation. We women don't negotiate well in business. We do it all the time in our personal life. We negotiate what movie to go to, what restaurant to go to, if we have children, what time our children are going to go to sleep. But when we get into the workplace, we suddenly get reluctant. And there's a book out called Women Don't Ask. And the author said that if a woman doesn't negotiate on her very first salary package, she could lose $500,000 to $1 million in her career. And last of the essentials is constructive confrontation. And in one of the keynotes I was doing, one of the people in the audience said, well, that sounds like jumbo shrimp. They don't go together. That's an oxymoron. But it really is true. When we think about conflict and confrontation, in our head we think about what our mother said. If you don't have anything nice to say, don't say it at all. But you know what? She also said something else. She said it's not what you say, it's how you say it. And so if women reframed this thing called conflict into a, you and I have different positions, but we probably have a common goal, so let's look at it as coming to a workable solution. And so those are the essentials that women need to live their all.
Yeah, Cynthia, so I saw you nodding your head as Jane was sort of laying out some of those principles. Any one of those that you might be able to share a story or that resonates with you a little bit more that's helped you as you are working through having your all?
Absolutely. I think many of those points were spot on. And I think the point that Jane was making about mentors and sponsors are key. And I found one of the things that was really important to me through my career was having a group of women in particular. Not that men cannot do that as well for you, but I found over time a group of your personal advisory board, for lack of a better term, who can both serve as a mentor and some as sponsors has been a huge help to me personally. And I would suggest that to anyone who's looking to grow in their career or make a change in their career. The other piece that really resonated with what Jane was saying is the whole conflict piece and dealing with that effectively. I think that is so key. And I learned that a lot in my marketing career, but I really brought those lessons home in my nonprofit work, as I was mentioning to you before we came in, when we were trying to advocate for research, for funding, for CP, for example, thinking that we could just march into Washington and point out that they were not funding this and that we and thought somehow that might work. It doesn't work like that. And especially when you're in a nonprofit, you're relying on volunteers. You don't have a direct group of people that report to you in the same way. And being able to motivate them, take disparate groups who have competing interests and try to rally them around a common goal, even when you may disagree on certain key principles, is something that is so important. And women do tend to not ask, or on the converse, they'll be too aggressive. And sometimes, and finding that middle ground, being human, I think is so important.
Yeah, and our listeners always, I'm going to pick up on a word you just said, the idea of being human. So our listeners love to hear the stories of our guests and their successes, but I think just as much as their successes, learning a little bit about where each of you are human and maybe you tried to implement some of these strategies or these principles and it didn't quite go the way that you thought it would. So I'm sort of going back to you, Jane, because you said this started from a personal experience, and then you continued in a career of a number of different things, but I would imagine you were trying to embody this at times that were challenging to really be true to yourself and keep that integration. So can you share with our listeners maybe a story that would have some resonance that says, you know, it didn't quite work well, and maybe what you learned personally?
I immediately think about my first job in corporate America. Transitioning from education to the corporate world was a pretty tough transition because the corporate world questions educational credentials as not being transferable. So when I got that offer that I wanted, they put the first offer out there, and I said, oh, that's great, yeah. And there was this dead silence, and the HR person said, I think we can offer you a little bit more money. I think they were embarrassed that I actually took the first offer on the table. And that taught me a lot about negotiation and what I didn't do.
Yeah.
So that's one example. And I'll give you a personal example. I had a sense that my younger son needed more of my time. You know, I was, as I said, working full time. And I started doing these life checks with him. I would do these incomplete sentences like, I'm happiest when, I'm saddest when, I wish my mom would. And his answer was, spend more time with me. Mm. And that was an amazing awakening that I was not on the right path with him. And I had to readjust my priorities to make sure I could spend more time with him. And in fact, I started volunteering at his school. I did some substitute teaching. I helped them develop a leadership program, took my skills to do that so I could be around him more.
Yeah, great. How about you, Cynthia? Something that is you are trying to do the right thing for your family and then your two entities, maybe something that didn't quite come all together.
Right. I have many of those. just trying to narrow it down to just a couple. I think that one of the things that I did is I tried to do it all and not ask for help early on. I resisted help in terms of getting a nanny and different things because I just felt like I needed to try to do it all. And it almost, you know, it was just, it became crushing. And so I had to learn to ask for more help. That's been a really difficult thing for me to do. And I think that I've had to make some course corrections along the way, as Jane was saying, in terms of how to work best with my children and do what's best for them in terms of my work-life balance. Much of what I do in my nonprofit life is on the weekends, and I've had to really monitor that because it will take me away, and I don't want to miss their events or miss those kinds of things. So I've had to really work on that. And I have a similar experience to Jane of several different jobs where I did not negotiate at all. It was just like, okay, great. When do I start?
You want me.
And I have come around to learn better.
Yeah. So that key point of negotiation, and also you all are just circling back to something you talked about, the whole mentor sponsorship. For those of our listeners that listened to the show last week, we had Becky Blayock on and Helene Lawless from Path Builders, and they spent a lot of time talking about the difference between mentors and sponsors and how that really can help you achieve what your objectives are. So, Jane, kind of going back to the book, Chapter 5, The Workplace, What Organizations Can Do to Support Your Success. So you talked about in some of those essentials that you got to think about your support network, and that's resources that you're building for yourself. And you also talked about this whole idea of delegation and how your team can support you. But what are some things to think about as it relates to the organization in which you're in that help you achieve this role integration?
And that depends upon which stage in your career you're at. When you're in your first stage, you've gotten the job, and you really believe you've been hired because you're competent, so you have a lot of confidence. Things you need to do, you go through orientation and onboarding, but there's a whole way, as we know, that the organization works on an informal level. who really has the power, who really has the information, how do processes really work. So it's really important for you to make sure that somebody in your organization introduces you to people who can help you understand the informal organization, helps you get up to speed much more quickly. And of course, you're looking for that next promotion. And it's also important in your first job to have a really good supervisor who's willing to give you time to help you develop.
So let me just interrupt before you talk about some of the other principles. But what do you do when you don't have that? You know, sometimes, many times, most times, the supervisor, particularly when you're new and don't know the organization, is the luck of the draw. And while we like to think that all supervisors know how to help the people that work for them, that's not always the case. So what suggestion do you give to our listeners that maybe are in that situation right now?
Well, to your listeners and also to the women that I coach who are in that stage, it's network with other employees, find out who's open to helping young employees. It might not be your boss. Because as we know, people aren't always promoted into leadership who have the best leadership skills. They might be the best technician, but they're not necessarily the best leaders. So it's really opening yourself up to networking with others and finding out who really knows, who's really open to helping. So when you move, you get that promotion, you move into your second stage, I think you're really looking around the organization for role models, for what does success look like here? And you're beginning to think, yeah, I have a work life, but I also have another life. And how do I begin to integrate my life so I bring my whole self to work? And again, that's where mentors come in, where mentors can really help. And again, it doesn't need to be inside your organization. But it's nice if your organization is also providing training and development that's just not technical. The third stage women get into is when they're really trying to figure out how to integrate all their roles because maybe they've gotten married or have a partner, they're having their first child, and they're asking themselves, how can I juggle this all? Again, they're looking for role models. They're looking for coaching. And this is the stage at which organizations are in danger of losing their high potential women. Because the work world is not structured for dual career families. And so typically the women take the primary role. And there's some research out that says the first 100 days back at work after a woman has a child is when she decides whether to stay or not. Mm. And so there's several organizations that are on the forefront of this that provide some phenomenal mentoring for women from the time they get pregnant, their first child, so they know what to expect, to they stay in touch with them through maternity leave and then transition them back into the organization. And it's really interesting. One of my interviews has been one of the 70-hour-a-week travel partner in a large professional services firm. And her children are at the age where she realized, I need to spend more time with them. Well, she had already built up trust and credibility in the organization, so she negotiated with the senior partners for her to lean back and work part-time.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. So, and then the next few stages after that, as a woman gets into leadership positions, it's important for her to remember how she got where she is and to reach her hand out to mentor and to sponsor. And Madeleine Albright has this wonderful quote that I heard her say at one of her speeches I was at. And somebody said, well, what do you do if you have women who don't mentor other women? And she says, there's a special place in hell for women who don't mentor other women.
And that's not a place I want to go. So, Cynthia, switching gears just a little bit, talk to us a little bit of the things that are going on with your foundation and some of the things that you have on the horizon so we can get a sense of the good work that organization is doing.
Sure, I'd love to. But I do want to say one thing.
Absolutely.
About what Jane said, piggybacking off that, is another thing as a woman, a young woman early in her career, one of the best things I think they can do is look for problems to solve. Especially if they're in a corporate environment, looking for problems to solve does two things. It both helps their superior, their supervisors, but it also starts to position them in that way. And I think if I wish I would have received that tip earlier in my career. I really became aware that that was a great skill to have. Identify a problem that no one's solving and figure out how to solve it.
Which in some ways your foundation is really, they kind of came out of that
idea. That's kind of my thing now. Trying to find things to solve. But I wish, had I known that earlier on in my career, I think that would have even been more effective. I wasn't quite able to articulate it in that way when I was very young in my career, my marketing career. But I think that is such an important skill if you want to move up in a corporate environment. When you're an entrepreneur, you have to do that all the time. But when you're in a more of a corporate environment, it may not be as clear cut that you can still be entrepreneurial in a way inside of a corporate environment. In terms of our foundation, one exciting thing that we have on the horizon is that we established National Cerebral Palsy Awareness Day with Senator Isaacson here in Georgia, which is March 25th. We did that a few years ago, and this year we're going to be doing an event with Children's Healthcare of Atlanta to celebrate that. So there'll be more news about that coming out soon, but it's going to be at the end of March at Children's Healthcare of Atlanta, co-sponsored with our foundation, where we're going to be bringing lots of new information to the families in Georgia about neuroplasticity and neurorehab, which is a new frontier for brain injuries, not just CP, but brain injuries. There's a lot of new research. And the other thing that our foundation is in the process of doing, in addition to our advocacy work for funding for CP and other related brain disorders, is forming, basically, for lack of a better descriptor, a nonprofit incubator for research to be able to identify the most promising researchers and research in the field of CP and support those researchers with direct funding. Mm-hmm. So brain science and CP research for the cause of CP, which is still unknown in most cases, is so critical to being able to unlock that for the future. So we're very excited about that. We're going to be giving a series of awards for young brain researchers, young investigators in the coming year, and co-sponsoring conferences for family, because education and educating families when they receive this diagnosis is so important for the long-term outcome of happiness of that family unit. We really see that. The more information a family has and more they need to know what to do with their child, the better they are.
Yeah, and I'm curious, the work that your foundation does, you said it's a parent-led nonprofit. What's the sort of the importance for our listening audience of that distinction and sort of that lens in which you're looking at the issue?
Sure. Well, I think one of the important things is that we are all volunteers. So instead of having, not that there's anything wrong with it, many nonprofits are run by staff, you know, nonprofit executives, but we are all either parents or individuals with cerebral palsy themselves who are part, or clinicians. So everyone involved in our foundation has a direct touch. They're touched, either they have it, they have a child who has it, or they treat individuals who have CP. And I think that gives us a lot of passion. And it also, one of the things I felt was so important was to have a medical advisory board, because we were parents, lay people. We needed a strong medical advisory board to give us credibility when we were advocating in Washington or dealing with clinicians or other researchers around the world, because now we're in Australia, in Asia, in Canada. And so having that medical advisory board piece is critical to us, since we're all parents.
Yeah. Jane, kind of what's going on with you? So obviously you've got this book. It is connected to where your focus really is now. And so talk to us a little bit about either how your things you're doing with that, or what's next, or things in your consulting practice.
What's going on with me right now is I'm doing a lot of media around the book, because the book has been really resonating tremendously. And I am doing executive coaching with women, and that's sort of a misnomer, because I'm coaching women in their 20s to women in their 60s. And everybody is looking for, am I in the right place in life, and what's my next chapter? And so I'm doing that. I'm doing a lot of keynote speaking around the book. and getting involved in companies, helping them look at how do they attract and retain high-potential women. Because women are over 50% of the workforce, and they will be significant contributors in the leadership arena.
Yeah, you mentioned the book is getting a lot of traction with men as well. Maybe share a little bit about that and sort of in what way are they interested and how are they taking some of these principles?
If you look at the roles that had been assigned to men and women historically, men were the breadwinners. And so they never thought about necessarily the time they were trading off with their other interests or their family. That's what they were supposed to do. And women were supposed to be at home taking care of the home front, kind of the leave it to Beaver, Ozzie and Harriet, you know, she was vacuuming in her shirtwaist dress and pearls, you know, role. And I sort of mark World War II as the transition where women had to work in the munitions plants and the shipyards because men were shipped off to war. But, of course, when men came back, women had to go back into the workplace, into the home. They were fired. But some of the women still liked to work. So we got into this, maybe the roles would be changing. Women could have workplace roles. And it took quite a while to get there. You know, we had some pioneers around Sandra Day O'Connor and Cokie Roberts who were in the 50s, 60s trying to break into the world of work, and we're told women don't do that. But yet, so the role of women has been changing over time, but so is the role of men. As I cited, one of the women I interviewed, her husband is a stay-at-home dad for three children, which enables her career. And so that's a very different role for a man. The millennial men, as I mentioned earlier, seem to resonate because they don't want to work like their parents worked. They don't want to work 80 hours and not have any other part of their lives. And so what they're looking for is, how do I integrate my life? I want to work hard. I want to earn a good living, but I want to do other things in my life. Mm-hmm. I want to be part of my family. And I, on a personal level, I have an older son who's married and has two-year-old twins. And he is a co-parent. He's an attorney. And my daughter-in-law works part-time as a dermatology PA. She was full-time before the twins came. But yet, it's very important to my son to be present in his children's lives. And so he has worked his professional and personal life so that he can integrate his roles.
You know, I think that's an area that people that are just starting their career, I think sometimes the narrative is that they're not, that they have high expectations. They're not willing to, you know, put their nose to the grindstone as we perceive that we did. But I think this is an area where we could really learn that, you know, from is that that's not it. They're just saying that a lot of things that now we're wanting and we're realizing, gosh, I wish I had paid a little bit more attention to that. They're starting out their careers in that way. That can only lead to positive change as they continue to grow in their careers, I think.
And you know what, Michelle? Technology has enabled that. I can remember my older son when he went to work. His first job was with a large law firm. And he was so frustrated for the expectation of being at the brick-and-mortar law firm. He said, Mom, I'm networked at home. If I want to write a brief at midnight because that's when I work best, I don't understand this whole FaceTime thing. Mm. And I don't mean the iPad app. I mean the interpersonal FaceTime thing. He said, I get having to be at the office sometimes, but if I could work at home and be with my family and I'm still producing great work, why not?
Yeah.
So these men are looking, as we women are, looking for other ways to be successful in work, and it's changing.
Yeah. And I, as you were talking about that, Jane, I'm going back to something that, Cynthia, you said at the top of the hour, is that one of the things you've got better about is setting those boundaries. And I think that that's, you know, again, one of these key things is once you move into more of a virtual world and it's technology all the time, anytime, in order to have that role integration, you've got to be able to set those boundaries so that you're able to flow between the roles and not let any one of them sort of overcome
right.
you.
I think that's really important, especially I'm in social and digital media, which is a global community 24 hours a day. So if I don't set boundaries, I could just find myself never ending because it's virtual. And if it's 9 a.m. here, it's, you know, it's a different time in Australia and people are always engaging on social media or the internet at all hours.
Yeah, just very quickly, I want to give both of you the opportunity to let our listeners know how they could get in touch with you and learn more about the things that you're doing. And so, Cynthia, I'll start with you, and let's get information. You spend a lot of time talking about your foundation, but also allow our listeners to know how they could reach you for your media consultancy as
well. Sure, absolutely. The Health Marketing Works concept is in the process of being launched this coming spring, so I'm in the process of building out a new website for that, and et cetera. But if someone wants to reach me now, because I already have clients, and we're already hard at work, they can reach me either via my Twitter address, which is on, I think, on, will be on the website, correct?
Yeah.
Or my LinkedIn profile, which also has all my contact information.
Okay. But for those that may not have time to go back, let's give them your contact information so that they can jot it down right
Sure.
now, and then Jane will come to you.
Sure. On Twitter, I am at Cynthia Fresina. And on LinkedIn, again, just Cynthia Fresina, and you can reach me that way, or you can call me at 404-281-9773.
I love that. Not all of our guests always give a phone number. Sometimes the easiest way to reach people is just to pick up the phone and call them. Jane, how can our listeners continue to learn more about what you're doing and invite you in to help them deal with these issues?
I have a comprehensive website, www.thegoldnergroup.com. You can find everything there, but my Twitter is The Goldner Group. I'm also on LinkedIn, Jane Goldner. And whether you want to get in touch with me for executive coaching or a company wanting help with attracting and retaining high potential women, all that is on my website and including my blog.
Great. So I'm going to close this week's show with the question I always ask our guests. So we've been talking about a lot of great stuff, and some of it has been reflective in terms of things that you wish you had known when you started your career. So think back to your 20-year-old self, and if you could give your 20-year-old self one nugget of advice, what is it that you would share with your 20-year-old self? I'm going to start with you, Jane.
The key piece of advice I wish I had known and I would like to share is you don't have to do everything perfectly.
Hmm.
There's such a thing as an 80-20 rule. When it's good and 80% ready, go with it. Don't wait to make everything perfect.
Great. I needed to hear that.
I think if I could give any advice, it would be fearless. Don't be afraid to make mistakes and be yourself. Don't feel that you have to change yourself.
Yeah, and that's really the whole premise of a lot of what we've been talking about today. Both of you have just been fabulous in helping our listening audience have some food for thought about how they go forward in their careers and how they focus on role integration and not work-life balance. I really do like that concept. I think that's a term that if it isn't already picking up more as a way to talk about this. Jane, I know your work is going to help us think about that. So to our listening audience, join us again next Friday at 10. So where we talk about all things growth, because
growth matters.